Oh, well, thank you. It's a little rainy today, but I apologize for getting the call started late. Had another appointment that went way longer than I anticipated, so I apologize. But I'll turn the call over to Drew, to you, to give us an update from the governor's office.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you to Landis Scott Regional Council for hosting this meeting. Before I start going into numbers and details, today at 3 o'clock, the governor, along with the coronavirus task force, will be holding update on COVID-19. That'll be at 3 o'clock. You can find that through DPS's website. Also, you can watch it on your local PBS stations. So getting into numbers here, as of today, we have 189,576 lab confirmed cases. There have been just over 2.7 million tests completed. And we're hovering right in between 5% and 6% positivity rate. So that's very good. We're starting to see that positivity rate decrease, which is what we want. So the trends are looking good. And there are currently 894 people hospitalized. And so that number's stabilizing at below 900. So that's a very good thing there. Breakdown per county numbers. Madison County has 88 lab confirmed cases. Buncombe County has 2,808 cases. Henderson County has 1,869 cases. And Transylvania County has 299 lab confirmed cases. The next set of numbers I'd like to move into briefly are the unemployment numbers. As of today, so from March 15th through September 17th, there have been a total of 1,283,754 claimants, and there have been a total payouts of $7.9 billion in unemployment insurance. And we're seeing our numbers for pending resolutions decrease. So we're at 1% for folks pending state benefits, 14,235. And there have been 14,537 people not approved for state benefits. However, they're pending resolution for federal benefits. So it brings us to a total of 70% of all claimants have been approved for benefits. That's good news. The majority of the folks that are filing claims, they are getting their benefits. The last thing I want to talk about here, as of today, the application for the GREAT grants have been opened. So that's there's a pool of $32 million in special GREAT grant fundings to expand internet access to rural areas. And what this actually means, projects in Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties, as well as rural census tracts located in Tier 3 areas, currently being served by less than 25 megabytes per second download and 3 megabytes per second upload, are eligible for this 2020 special supplementary GREAT grant round. So you can, if you, Hometown Strong put this out, but if you, I guess applications can be found at the GREAT grants page, and questions can be directed to the GREAT grants program there. So with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to put them in the chat box. I'll be happy to answer them.
Drew, do you have an update, the federal unemployment benefit that's coming through, I guess, the emergency assistance funds. I'd read a report that said North Carolina had 7 weeks of funding for the, I guess it's $300-$400 additional per month. Do you have any information on that?
I do not. I know that, you know, like you said, it's proposed at 7 weeks, but I don't have any follow-up on, I don't have any follow-up on that.
And you mentioned the GREAT grants. I know that's a big deal because in the past, only Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties could apply. In our region, as I recall, Madison and Transylvania are Tier 2 counties. Henderson and Buncombe are Tier 3. But this funding is available for Tier 3, which would include Buncombe and Henderson for those rural census tracts. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it looks like in those rural census tracts, they have to meet the megabyte, I guess, cap that they, if that rural census tract is being served by less than 25 megabits of internet speed, that they would be eligible to apply.
Well, Drew, thank you for your update from the governor's office. We really appreciate you sharing with Landisky Regional Council on a pretty much a weekly basis, and it's very helpful. So thank you so much. I think we have Dr. Walden with NC State on the call. So Dr. Walden, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Yes. Can you hear and see me?
I can. Thank you so much for joining and sharing with us. I don't know how much of an introduction you want, but Dr. Walden is one of the most preeminent thought leaders in our state, one of the top economists. He's with the NC State University College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's received numerous awards over the years to recognize his contributions to North Carolina, I think including the Order of the Longleaf Pine. So, Drew, it might be appropriate to make a request to Governor Cooper to award the Longleaf Pine for Dr. Walden's service because of his esteemed record. And we're really grateful that he can share with us just an update on what's happening in North Carolina's economy. And maybe, you know, I know our region has been impacted a little more. Our unemployment rate spiked higher. We really had a dramatic change from being the lowest unemployment rate in the state to one of near the highest. I think right now the Asheville Metro is the fourth highest in North Carolina of any metro. So, Dr. Walden, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Nathan. I will remind everyone at 10 o'clock on Friday, we will have the August numbers for North Carolina's labor market. So look for those. You can go on bls.gov and as well as to go to North Carolina Department of Commerce. The other thing I might say is, in terms of, I picked up the tail end of your previous conversation. There is a group that I'm participating with called the North Carolina Pandemic Recovery Office. It's a collection of people in state government, as well as some academics and others who are advising them. And one of the things that group will be doing, I learned yesterday, will be putting out a report to show where the money that North Carolina has received from the federal government for the pandemic, where that has gone, and they will get that down to the county level. So that's something you'll want to be looking for if you see a headline, and there are lots of headlines, of course, but if you see a headline for the North Carolina Pandemic Recovery Office report on that, that's something that I think will be of interest to you. What I want to do today is just briefly talk about how the pandemic has affected the state economy and particularly your region. Where are we now? Are we improving? And then what are going to be some of the long run effects? And Nathan told me to go maybe about 15 or 20 minutes and then time for questions, but I'll let Nathan control the time. Clearly we've been impacted as I don't know any state that's not been impacted by the pandemic. A recession has certainly been caused. We already saw a dip in the gross output of the state as well as nation in the first quarter. The big drop was in the second quarter, where on an annualized basis, the economy contracted by about one third. We're in the third quarter. We don't have any final numbers, obviously, but we do think that we are improving. One thing we can track on a month-to-month basis is the job market. And again, you see a big loss primarily in April, but since April, it is from May on, we've been adding jobs. And right now, depending on where you are, but just as a ballpark, we have recovered about half the jobs that we lost in the second quarter. So another way of saying it looks like we're about halfway back. But I want to make sure you understand that doesn't mean all the jobs are the same jobs. And in fact, one of the impacts that I'm going to talk about later is how I think this pandemic, one of the lasting effects, will be a major impact on the job market. We're going to have a different economy post-pandemic than we had pre-pandemic. Just looking here specifically at the Asheville regional job numbers, you lost about 20, this is all jobs, you lost about 20% of your jobs, 20%. From February to April, and that was well above the state loss of 14%. Your leisure hospitality sector, which was a big loser, I think is the major reason for that. In fact, if you look at the Asheville Metro and the Wilmington Metro, a lot of similarities there in terms of much bigger percentage job losses than the state. Leisure hospitality sector in the Asheville region from February to April, hold your hats, lost 64% of their jobs, almost two-thirds, and just an amazing drop. Now, the good news is there's been a rebound, and right now, for the July numbers, and again, Friday we'll have the August numbers, but as of July, that sector was down 23%. So the losses have been cut in half. Other sectors that lost big was what's called other services, which is a lot of that is personal services. That was down 28% in jobs between February and April. That's also recovered. They're down about 13% compared to pre-pandemic. Financial services only lost 1.5%. And right now they're back to pre-pandemic levels. And that was one of the, of course, essential services that were kept open. And as I'm looking down here, manufacturing, always important to look at manufacturing. Manufacturing jobs in your region were down 9% from February to April. And right now they're down again, July. And again, we're going to get an update on Friday, but as of July, they were down 7%. So a little bit of a clawback. And you're absolutely right, Nathan, your unemployment rate is higher right now, 9.4%. In your region and is higher than the state level. We do think we are in a rebound. Some economists are very optimistic about the third quarter numbers. They think that we could see, as I said, the drop in GDP, gross domestic product, in the second quarter on an annualized basis. And all that means is that if what happened in the second quarter continued for an entire year, and don't get me talking about why economists insist on doing those annualized numbers, because I quite frankly think they're confusing. But anyway, there are some economists who are thinking that we might have a rebound in the third quarter that maybe approaches that third. So that's good news. We of course are seeing this because most states have opened up. North Carolina, as you know, is in phase 2.5. People are now going back to work. People are tentatively going out shopping. And as my wife and I do this every week, it seems like we see a few more people. Of course, very few businesses are back to 100%. But we continue to watch the COVID numbers. The latest numbers give some reason for optimism in the sense that we look like we're trending downward, or have been for a few months or a few weeks in North Carolina in terms of new cases. Hospitalizations are down from their peak. It looks like we're flirting with that magic 1% rate, which is a measure of how much an infected person can infect other persons. And the rule of thumb there is you get that below 1%, the virus is going to die out. So there are reasons, I think, to be optimistic. We also have been told that a vaccine may be around the corner. We don't know exactly how soon, but I heard a report yesterday from one of the top health officials in the federal government that he said, I think it was a he, said that by third quarter of next year, we will be back to normal. We'll be back to normal doing all the things that we normally would have done. So that's also encouraging news. So certainly watch for all news on the vaccine and when that's going to be ready and who's going to get it, et cetera. Even if it's ready by the president, in fact, has mentioned possibly before the election, doesn't mean everyone's going to get vaccinated before the election. So it's going to take a while to vaccinate, 340 million people. So reasons for optimism. Now, let me spend the rest of my time on talking about long-run impacts, because I think that's probably going to be the lasting effect of this virus, other than medical implications. It's going to have major impacts on our economy, how we work, what we work in, where we live, how we educate our children, et cetera. All that is changing. In fact, I do a bi-weekly column. Maybe some of you see it in some of the papers in the Asheville region. And I wrote a column a couple weeks ago. The title was, "Is it really 2030 rather than 2020? And what I meant in that column is that the forces that we now see at work, like more remote working, people buying online more, different kinds of jobs being created that maybe don't require as much personal interaction, those were all trends that that economists had been noting. What the virus has done is it's speeded them up. It's accelerated them. And so there are a lot of economists who think that where we are right now is where we would have been if we hadn't the virus in maybe 2030. Let me talk about a few of those. I think first and foremost is the job market. I do think there's going to be a new emphasis on trying to limit personal interaction in a variety of different jobs, like in restaurants, personal service jobs. You've probably read about hotels that are reopening, what those hotels are doing to advertise to customers to get them to come is to say, you don't have to see a person when you check in. That's all done electronically or digitally. And some hotels are actually substituting robot maids for human maids. And I think that's going to be a trend. Something else that caught my eye recently, as you well know, we have a big food processing sector here in North Carolina. In fact, the largest food processing meatpacking center, I should say, in the world is in Bladen County, Tar Heel, North Carolina. And we've had some outbreaks of the COVID in those meat processing plants. Those were deemed essential, so they've stayed up and working. And I was interviewed by a reporter maybe 2 months ago when this started, and I said, well, I think one of the long-run impacts of this is going to be probably meat processors are going to look for ways to reduce their use of labor and use more machinery. I think that's coming. It's not here yet. Well, maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, here I read an article in one of the national newspapers about a food processing plant in the Midwest, not here, but in the Midwest, that was actually beginning to use robots to do some of that work in food processing plants. So I think we're going to have a big churning, if you will, in our job market. And one of the challenging things about this economic recovery that we're going through is it's not consistent across jobs and not consistent across income levels. The jobs that have come back, and in fact, some of them didn't even go away, were those that can be done remotely, like my job and many people who work in business and finance, advertising, et cetera, the tech sector. Very few of those jobs were lost. That work continued, although people, instead of going in an office building, they worked at home, and that's continuing. Those tend to be higher paying jobs. And then the jobs where there's been a contraction still, if you think about people who work in the hospitality and leisure sector, those are restaurants, hotel people, et cetera. I started my career as a young person in a fast food restaurant. You don't get paid a lot. You hope to move up the ladder, of course, and do better. But those tend to be lower paying jobs. And those are the jobs that have not come back as fast. So we've got this. This is going to exacerbate income inequality. And I think a lot of attention is going to be paid to that. I know this group that I'm on, a business group that has been meeting periodically virtually with the governor. And that's been one of the issues that's been brought up. So I think we're going to have a new challenge for our educational systems, high schools, community colleges, my sector, higher education, to watch where do we need to retrain people and how do we get them retrained in a fast and affordable way? So that's going to be one impact. I think another impact, and this I think can have big implications for your region. Another impact I think is going to be that many people, once this settles down and they have time to think this through, may decide that they don't want to live in big cities. They don't want to live in dense areas because the virus loves dense areas. And if you look at a map of North Carolina, it's those counties that are urban, more urban, that have had the largest number of cases even on a per capita basis. And if you think about a family, a young family raising children, and those are going to be, well, even you know, those are going to be ones who are going to be obviously worried as well as everyone else about the virus. And if that young family, the workers in that family can work remotely, and if they can find a place that provides high-speed internet that's not in a big city, it's in a small town or rural area, they may very well consider that's the place we want to be. So we've already had, for example, data showing that 200,000 people already have left the New York metropolitan area, 200,000. And a map of where they're going shows they're coming, a lot of them are coming south. So I do think that one thing your region can do is to market yourself as a safe place if we get more viruses because you have a less dense area. Now, on the matter of high-speed internet, which is always the pushback I get from people when I talk about this, that, yeah, but we don't have high-speed internet. It's going to take a while to lay those lines. High-speed internet in rural areas ultimately is not going to be divided by lane lines of cord. What's going to happen, and there are businesses that are already doing this, for example, Elon Musk, his SpaceX program, high-speed internet is going to be divided by low-flying satellites. And they're already developed, they're already out there, the people are just waiting for the commercial benefits of that to occur. So I see that as a potential big impact. Well, let me stop there. I've been watching my clock, see if I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you so much, Dr. Walden. And if anyone has any questions for Dr. Walden, please enter those in the chat function. If you're joined by phone and you can't do that, you're welcome to text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. Dr. Walden, you know, prior to COVID-19, and certainly we've had trade tensions, and I think if you see Brexit and what's happened in Europe and the current political environment in the United States, you know, there's been some pushback from globalism, but, you know, most economists would have told us that an expanding global economy, more trade, more interaction was really good for everyone. Now it may not have impacted everyone equally, and some groups, you know, may have not got benefits like others, but globalization was a good thing. How do you think COVID-19 will impact that?
Well, first on the matter of globalization, it certainly has been a issue where the net benefits have been positive, but there have been a lot of studies, and particularly out of Harvard University, there's a gentleman there, David Autor, has done a lot of studies on this, which show that not everyone's benefited, particularly those people who lost their jobs in the factory because those jobs have gone offshore. I actually have a new book that I'll hold up, Authors Never Wait, called Real Solutions, and it's actually based on my 40 plus years of being a professor and doing a lot of public presentations like this, where I've had questions about trade, budget deficit, healthcare, taxes, etc. So I wrote a 500-page book over the last 3 or 4 years that gives my take on all those. And one of the chapters I do have is on trade. And one of the things I recommend in this chapter is that clearly there have been people that have been disadvantaged from trade. I think you don't have to move anywhere other than North Carolina, rural North Carolina, to find that. Our furniture industry, our textile industry, apparel industry, et cetera. And yet we've had mediocre programs to try to help retrain those people. What I recommend in this book is a very small tax, 0.1 cent. On every import, and that would raise in the billions of dollars that could be used for retraining workers who have been adversely impacted by trade. Now, to get to your point, Nathan, or question, Nathan, I do think there's going to be some pushback on globalization. It's not going to go away, but pushback on globalization in two areas. One is supply chains. Even before the virus came here, it affected China, Wuhan province, their big manufacturing province. And because that province had to be shut down, a lot of companies here in the U.S. who bought inputs from China, they were left high and dry. And I think they're going to be reconsidering this and thinking maybe we need to have at least some supply chain here in the U.S. I think that's going to be one impact. The second impact, I think, is going to be in terms of medical equipment and medical supplies. We were really caught, if I can use this term, high and dry in many areas. I remember there was a situation where I forget what it was exactly we needed. I think it was either gowns or masks. And a country that had them was India, and India was refusing to sell them to us until the president got on the phone with Prime Minister Modi and they worked out a deal. We don't want to be in that situation, so I think we're going to have a concerted effort to make sure that we have the capacity here to have all of the production of needed medical supplies here in this country. The experts tell us that we could have another bout of another COVID whatever in the future. These things pop up. They usually are benign in the sense they don't go pandemic on you, but a challenge of the scientists, at least what I've read, is deciding early on which viruses have the potential to go pandemic and which don't. But I do think we're certainly going to give more attention. I actually predict, here's a prediction you can take and your colleagues. Whomever we have in office January 20th, President Trump or President Biden, I think one of their first acts once Congress comes in session, is to recommend the creation of a cabinet-level Department of Pandemic Prevention, similar to what we did after 9/11, where we elevated a lot of those terrorist activities to Homeland Security. I think we're going to give the same kind of prominence to pandemics. And if you think about it, if we increase our spending on pandemic prevention, pandemic preparation, et cetera, let's say by half a trillion a year, that's an investment well spent in my mind, because look at all the trillions of dollars we've lost in terms of lost output, lost income, et cetera. So I do think that's a fair bet to make, that we're going to see more efforts at the federal level to centralize our work on preventing pandemics and being ready for them. And one way to do that is to give more prominence to those activities.
Dr. Walden, we have a question through the chat. Have you seen through your research that climate-related impacts, specifically, you know, more perhaps hurricanes, natural disasters, that you're seeing increased migration to North Carolina and specifically places like Western North Carolina, where people may feel, you know, they're a little safer than, like, you know, we see what's going on in California from the wildfires now. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Other than Sparta, of course. Other than Sparta with the earthquake. I'm teasing.
Yeah, the earthquake.
Yeah, that's outside. Right. I think that's outside of your zone, isn't it, Sparta? Yeah.
a little bit. That's in the upper northwest.
Yeah, yes. Well, first of all, if you look at North Carolina's what's called net in-migration rate, which calculates how many people are moving out of the state each year versus how many people are moving in from other states, we are always on the big plus side for that. So we have been attractive to people for decades. And I think if you combine that with what I think is going to happen, where there's going to be a increased desire by enough people such that we'll see it to live in lower, less dense areas, not in big, sprawling, highly dense metropolitan areas, but smaller towns and rural areas, as long as they get internet, I think that is going to occur. And I think, yes, Western North Carolina, you've got beauty, already a solid economy and a solid workforce. You've got great weather. I think that could be a marketing tool for you in the future, definitely.
And to follow up on your comment there, and I think some earlier comments, you know, really in modern times, since the industrial age, and probably even going back to that, and you certainly see this happening in China and other places in the world, there's been a migration from rural areas to urban areas. And in North Carolina, we often talk about the rural-urban divide. And prior to COVID, you know, we had the Triangle and Charlotte and Wilmington, even to some extent Asheville, doing pretty well. But then you had these rural communities that were losing population and jobs and, you know, healthcare access and lots of other things. I know you've talked about there could be some trends pushing back to where they're going to smaller cities, smaller communities. But could you elaborate on that? Because you're looking at a multi-century trend.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's that long, but if you look at a state like North Carolina, indeed the entire country, I'm only one generation past living on a farm. My father grew up on my grandfather's farm. I'm 70 years old, essentially what's happened in most states, Ohio, where I'm from, or North Carolina, as you had about 100 years ago, we were still predominantly a farm community. Then farming became very productive. You just didn't need as many people because technology came to the farm. And so that was the time manufacturing was getting started in the cities. So a lot of farm people moved to the cities. Then productivity came to the cities. And you had the service technology. And you had in this century, So anyway, the center cities actually emptied out. When I was in graduate school in the 70s, inner cities were a mess. Now they've come back because the technology sector developed. And that sector likes big cities where there's activities for the young workers, where there's a lot of collaboration, et cetera. I think we may be on another turning point where you can divorce, if you will, or separate where you work with where you live. And that's all going to be based on remote working. A lot of the big tech companies in California have already said, hey, workers, you can work wherever you want to. We're making that a permanent policy. So that I know that's a break with what we've had, but I could see this really taking hold when you combine the ability to work remotely with fears, quite frankly, about living in dense areas. And in fact, this is actually, I'm working with a publisher getting the final things worked out. I hope this will be my next book talking about this, how the post-pandemic world could totally reshape the geography of where we live and where jobs are and really narrow, if not eliminate, this urban-rural divide. Now, this isn't going to happen tomorrow, but I do think we may be at one of those inflection points. Sort of like we were 100 years ago when we reached an inflection point when people started moving off the farm to the cities. I think we might be at a point where people are going to move from the cities to less dense areas.
Well, certainly your book, North Carolina 2050, talked about a lot of those trends, and I think, you know, very pressing. And I guess you said we're at 2030 now. I don't want to keep you too long, but I'll ask you one final question. Our region, you know, we're working with a statewide effort with My Future NC, which is an effort to increase post-secondary credential attainment. And if you look at the pandemic, this recession has really hit low-income workers,
right,
or lower-wage workers harder to some extent because those jobs, it's harder to do remotely. It's impacted people of color more greatly, and actually it's hit women more greatly is my understanding, which is really a change from previous recessions that oftentimes where the male unemployment rate was much higher than the female unemployment rate. You think of economic development and vibrancy being the places that have the most educated workers. So the Triangle is a great example of a place that's churning out and also attracting lots of talent. And, you know, y'all are seeing unprecedented success there, in part because of your employer, NC State University, but also, you know, the entire UNC system, the community college system, and others. How do you see all those trends? Do you still think it's all about talent, or is it something other that? And, you know, you mentioned some employers automating, probably cutting out jobs. So there'll probably be some people whose jobs will go away because of that. So do you have any final thoughts there?
I do. I think that the next decade or two is going to be a decade when we have big changes, I'll call it a revolution, in the education sector, predominantly at the post high school level, but including high school. We are going to have big turnovers over in jobs. We're going to have some occupations go away or downsize considerably. Hopefully we're going to have new occupations. I'm not smart enough. I don't know anyone is smart enough to know exactly what those are. But I think what we need to do is we need to watch, and we can do that. We can watch and monitor where the jobs are being lost, where the jobs are being created, and then partner that information with our educational institutions. And I think what we, at least at the four-year level, have to do differently is a lot of folks who are going to find their occupation doesn't exist and they've got to get retrained. They don't have time to spend 4 years, 5 years, 6 years getting new training. We're going to have to develop task-oriented training programs. This is something the community college system is very good at doing. I think we're going to have to do it also at the four-year level. Task-oriented training systems where people can get into the training system to train in a task that is in demand, get in, get out, be very affordable. I think so we're going to have collaboration between those of us and people in state government, people in universities, and people at the business level who are tracking occupational trends, feed that information to even the high school level, but certainly the community college and university levels, so they can quickly alter their degree programs. And that's something we're going to have to, I think, insist that universities do. As one who's been in a university for over 40 years, there are places that are very slow to change. Faculty are very, very dug in to their particular discipline. That's going to have to be shaken up if we're going to be successful here. Faculty are going to have to get much more flexible in teaching to what is being needed, because I do think we're going to have a big, big turnover. There are a couple of economists, I think it was about 7 years ago, a couple of English economists who really shook up at least the economics world when they published a paper saying that and predicting that by 2040, they were writing this in 2013, by 2040, half of the occupations that existed in 2013 either would be totally gone or would be downsized by something like 2/3. And that really caught the attention of the world. And I think we're now seeing why that could come to fruition. So I think, Nathan, you've hit exactly on, I think, our biggest challenge is the job market and the retraining that we're going to have to do. And that retraining has to be fast, flexible, and affordable.
Dr. Walden, we really appreciate you joining us. I could ask you questions all day, but I don't want to monopolize your time. And I know those who've joined us have other obligations as well. But you've been incredibly insightful as always, and we just enjoy learning more about your work. I'll encourage those on the call, if you want to purchase Dr. Walden's book, I think you could go to Dr. Walden's site on the NC State website, but where's the best way for people to learn more about that, Dr. Walden?
This book that I'm again shamelessly holding up, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the big sites, they're on there. For this one, just type my name and Real Solutions, and you'll go there.
I should have thought Amazon. Fortunately or not, almost everything is Amazon these days.
Yes.
So that's another discussion to really how this pandemic, a lot of the larger companies have done pretty well, but small business has really been hit hard by COVID-19. And I think, you know, our region is really a small business community. But Dr. Walden, we won't take up any more of your time. But again, thank you for joining us. It was really a wonderful presentation, and thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Well, thank you, and my wife and I look forward to coming over to the Asheville region again. We always make a couple trips a year. We have some relatives there. We've not done that because of the virus, but that's going to be one of our first trips once we feel able to do that. We love the Asheville area.
Well, you're welcome here anytime, and we just encourage you to wear a mask and spend lots of money. So with very, very grateful for that.
Very good.
So, but we wish you and your family, hope y'all stay safe, stay well.
Thanks.
And again, thank you for joining us. We did not have a state legislative update today. Chris Wall with EQV Strategic had a conflict. Would note that, you know, there was news headlines today that perhaps there's a deal to be made in Congress before the election. I don't know if that's the case, but I think they're talking about the $1.5 trillion number. So there's a bipartisan group of Democrats and Republicans that are pitching a proposal there. I think it's important, you know, and even as well managed as North Carolina has been, North Carolina, the Physical Research Division at the General Assembly has talked about a possibility of a $5 billion shortfall. So we're still advocating for support for our state and local governments. I don't think people realize how severe it can become and what's going to occur, and even in a state as that had significant reserves coming into this crisis. Just came out, I think, yesterday that I think Moody's said North Carolina had the best funded pension system in the United States. So, but even states like North Carolina are in need. So hopefully when it gets past the politics, there'll be a bipartisan agreement to recognize that unfortunately this crisis is not over, and we're going to have a little more bridge to get us to a better economy. But we will have these calls, another call next week. Hope you can join us. Just a reminder, these calls are taped. We try to place those on the Land of Sky website. You can go to our COVID-19 page and get those resources. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me at nathan@landofsky.org. And again, thank you for everything that y'all do for our region. And we'll give you back the rest of your day. So stay safe, stay well, and stay dry on this very rainy day. Hopefully, we don't have any really significant negative weather impacts from the storm we're experiencing. So thank you so much for joining us today.